The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, Champions League. Last 16 is something you earn. Gianni Infantino pulls out his balls in public while Steve McManaman looks on admiringly and we salivate over a sizzling last 16. After that, we focus on the weekend's action. There's a Premier League preview, there's posts, there's Sid Lowe, there's film news from the 1990s, party songs, Zenit fans, Chelsea leads, why Cagliari are playing in Parma, and much, much more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hey, everybody. Should I say that a little bit more quietly? Hey, everybody, John Ashton.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
All right, then. John Ashton in the pod today, raring, fired up, full of positive vibes after a night out at the Arras.
Yeah, I was at the Ali Pali last night.
Ali Pali.
For the big PDC championships. Right. Actually, I noticed on the way in that I was saying last week that I was at ATP.
Yeah.
And then we did actually go out for a dinner at a Buddhist restaurant before we went to watch the Clockwork Orange theatre thing.
Yeah.
Then the darts.
Yeah.
Can you see the pattern emerging here? It's the return of alphabet dating.
Oh, I see. Have you... Oh, wait, A, B, C, D?
Yeah.
All right, then.
Without even thinking about it, it's crept back into my life.
Well, don't you have to bring a girl with you for it to be a date?
Not necessarily. No, actually, my other half was there last night.
So, oh, all right. Yeah. All right.
Looking all right. Forward to that night of xylophoning that you've got coming up.
That's the voice of Paul McInnes.
Oh, yeah.
Similarly delicate this morning, Paul.
Yeah, but emotionally so.
Oh, yeah.
I got taken to the cleats. I'm a very penitent man this morning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Why, Paul? What would you do?
I actually can't say, but I transgressed.
Did you say sorry?
Yes, a million times.
That's the most important thing, I think, no? Yeah.
Well, meaning it probably is more important.
Right, right.
But okay. I meant it too.
Barry, when was the last time you said sorry?
There probably isn't a day goes by where I don't apologise
really?
Profusely for something. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Say sorry to the listeners, Barry.
Sorry. Sorry, listeners. For what you're about to hear. We are shells of men this morning, really.
Yep.
Well, Paul emotionally and the rest of us just physically.
Physically, we
were at various soirees.
Now, very, very exciting news from Switzerland, home of exciting news, is the Champions League draw. Now, this is just fresh out the... UEFA oven, if you like. So we've barely had had time to get our heads around it, John. Have you formed any initial conclusions?
Only that it's an exciting draw.
Yeah, how about that? Put 16 teams in a thing together, draw somehow.
Yeah, well, you've got United against Real.
Yeah, that's the one that's caught the media's attention because of... is it Cristiano Ronaldo going back? Is it Jose Mourinho with his knee-sliding antics at Old Trafford? What is it?
I think it's a little bit of everything, isn't it?
Mm. Well, I tell you what, talk to Sid about that in a second. Valencia, meanwhile, taking on Paris Saint-Germain. Barcelona drawing Milan yet again. They're always facing each other, these two. This will be their fifth and sixth meeting in just two seasons. And Milan, their odds going out to 110-1 following the draw, which speaks volumes. But other draws not involving Spanish sides, Celtic-Juve.
I like the look of that one, actually.
Well, a lot of people are saying that's a good draw for Celtic.
I mean, they probably could have got a slightly easier one, all right, but I don't think they've anything too much to worry about. I mean,
with Juventus, no?
Well, you're obviously going to have a tricky match in the last 16 of the Champions League.
That's true.
I remember they played them in the early 80s. And
Liam Brady?
Yeah, Liam Brady was playing for Juventus.
3-0 in Turin and 1-2-0 at home. I know this because they just talked about this on Sky Sports.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
All right, thanks. Well, that's all I was going to
all
say,
right, but
really.
They have... They have won both of their European Cup home games against Juventus, scoring 5 goals in the process, from which I deduct that the other one, they won where they had 3 goals.
Is there any particular reason why people think that's a good draw for Celtic?
Well, I think the perception is that Italian football is not what it was. Italian clubs struggle against English sides in the Champions League, forgetting, of course, that Chelsea had a pretty rotten time of it against Juve not so long ago. There's also the question about whether Juve are going to have beefed up by them with a proper top 20-goal-a-season striker fella. One thing we should mention is the fact that Giorgio Chiellini, who some people like me get very, very excited about, is actually going to be out for 2 months now, injured. He's due back, they think, for the second leg of that Champions League last 16 game with Celtic. So obviously that might improve the Scottish team's chances significantly. A lot of people excited, though. A lot of purists getting very, very hit up about Shakhtar Donetsk against Borussia Dortmund. proper football, John.
Well, it's the hipster match of choice, isn't it? It's the football hipster draw of the round.
Mm.
If it was a person, it'd have skinny jeans on.
Would it?
Yeah.
What else would it have?
Big afro.
Like
one of those massive spectacles. Beards that they seem to be wearing in Hoxton now. Look like Captain Birdseye.
Right, the kind of analysis you're simply not going to find anywhere else. Draw I'm very interested in is Porto-Malaga, because as Sid Lowe tweets, ojo con el Malaga, este equipo puede llegar lejos. This is a top team, Malaga. They burnt up that group stage, and now they got a pretty sweet-looking draw in the last 16. That could be one for you betting types to pile your funds on. But let's dial up Dr. Sid now and see if he can offer anything for our little Champions League draw party.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
We fired up the Sid signal and you appeared suddenly.
What's the signal?
It's a big lamp on the top of the...
signal?
Yeah, it's a big lamp on the top of the Guardian Towers with a big S
like
on it.
Like a Batman thingamajig. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
I used to, you know what? When I was a kid, right... A friend of my dad's gave me a Batman ray gun, and basically it was a torch with a little slide that you slotted in the front of it to be able to project the Batman sign onto your wall. It was the coolest toy I think I've ever had.
Did it work?
It was bloody brilliant, yeah.
It worked?
Yeah.
In the sense that it predicted, not in the sense that Batman used to turn up at your window.
No, Batman didn't actually turn up. And obviously in those days as well, Batman turning up would have been Adam West as well. It wouldn't have been Val Kilmer.
Right.
It would have been slightly disturbing, but...
Yeah,
but
I have to update you a bit. We moved on from Val Kilmer, actually.
Yeah, all right. Smarty pants.
Right.
I've been in Spain. How should I know?
Yeah. Now, hey, Sid, what's been the reaction in Spain in the last 3 minutes since the Champions League draw was made?
I'm glad you said that, because I was waiting for the what's the reaction question. I thought, well, how can there be a reaction? It's literally 5 or 10 minutes ago.
Right. No, come on. There must be...
The initial sense is, look, the game that everybody wanted to avoid from Real Madrid's point of view was Bayern Munich. Obviously, the one they probably wanted was Schalke. So in that sense, Manchester United are tough, and it's very historic, and it's a game that I think makes everyone excited. But it's not the one they were most frightened of. And I think there is a belief that Real Madrid are better than Manchester United. So in that sense, you know, it's not a bad draw for Real Madrid. But right now, I suppose more than anything else, it's about the excitement. And as you can imagine, the one thing everybody's talking about now is Redondo's back heel from, was it 2000? 2000, I think it was.
All right, well, that's good. What kind of state do you think Real Madrid are going to be in by the time they get to face United, given the way things seem to be fragmenting in their dressing room, etc.?
Yeah, it's a couple of months away, so it's very hard to predict what will happen between now and then. I think some of what happens between now and then may depend on the Copa del Rey and to what extent they're still alive in that, whether they slip away in La Liga. But bear in mind that the European Cup and the potential of winning the 10th European Cup is in some ways the glue that's holding everyone together now anyway. And this is what the focus has been. If you look back on Real Madrid's modern era European Cups, the 7th, 8th and 9th, in all of those seasons, they were pretty poor domestically. So I don't necessarily think that domestic problems mean that we should say, right, OK, well, they're going to blow the European Cup. It may even work the other way.
What about Barcelona's draw with Milan? They must be pretty happy with that.
I mean, they are, because I think it's in a way it's almost the perfect draw for them, in the sense that it's got that aura of a big game. It's got that sense of excitement about it. It's a nice big team, AC Milan. But at the same time, as you say, they're happy with it, in the sense that I think they know they're better than Milan. I saw a statistic a minute ago, and I may have seen this wrong. I think it was last 7 Champions League games Barcelona have played against Milan, not lost any of them. I think it's 4 victories and 3 draws. And I think they recognise that Milan are a side that are not as good as Barcelona. That said, of course, Milan have said publicly, haven't they, that there will be changes in the winter window, which may make them weaker rather than stronger. But so we don't know for sure what kind of Milan side it will be.
Sid, though, the other Barcelona question, of course, overshadowing all of this, is the terrible news about poor old Tito Villanova, who's undergoing surgery today, is it? Again?
Yes, it's today, yeah. I mean, they haven't explicitly told us what the surgery entails, but they're talking about a surgical intervention and the return of the cancer that he had in the saliva gland a year ago. So I think that means, and you know, I'm very kind of reluctant to say anything too concrete, but I assume that means the removal of the tumour or of the return of the tumour. They're then saying that there will be 6 weeks of chemotherapy and radiotherapy, but that during that time, according to the doctor's statement, during that time, there is a chance that he'll go back to work. And Sandra Rosset yesterday didn't put down a timescale, but he did talk about Tito Villanova being away for a few weeks. Now, of course, because there's a Christmas break, that few weeks in terms of games perhaps isn't as many games as it might have been at a different time of year. I mean, I think it may well be that in 2, 3, 4 weeks he's back. It may be in longer. Obviously, we'll know a bit more once today's operation has been done. They think he'll be in hospital for 3 or 4 days, and after that, perhaps things will be clearer.
What will Barca do with the coaching setup while he's away?
Barcelona were very, very clear about this yesterday, and Donny Subisareta, who's the sporting director, was saying, you know, what matters now is purely Dieter Villanova's health and nothing else is important. But, of course, everybody's asking what happens next, and they were clear on this. They said that Dieter Villanova, the phrase that Subisareta used was, Dieter Villanova was, is, and will be our coach. So right now, it's going to be his number two, which is Jordi Rauda, who will be his number two, will be in charge. Subisareta said explicitly that there'd been no conversation with Pep Guardiola about coming back. In fact, he seemed a little irritated, I think, at being asked that. And so there isn't any plan to make any change now. They want to put in place a plan, which is, they kept using the word normality, treating this with normality and just proceeding as they are with Dieter Villanova's team, even if Villanova himself isn't there. So I don't think this signals any kind of long-term change, certainly not yet, and it certainly doesn't signal him stepping down as coach.
Well, very best wishes to Villanova with his ongoing fight there. The other Spanish sides involved, we mentioned Barcelona, who've got to be confident. Valencia have got PSG, which is an interesting one to call because they blow very hot and cold to the Parisians. Meanwhile, Porto have a nasty-looking draw with a Malaga side who may not have too much history in this tournament, but they have an absolutely cracking record in the group stage.
Yeah, they have no history at all in the tournament. This is their first season, but they're the best debutants in the Champions League that there's been, certainly since Real Sociedad in 2003. I think it may even be ever now, because the statistic that likened them to Sociedad, I think, was with two group games to go. They came through the group brilliantly, and they're conceding fewer goals than anyone else, both in the Champions League and domestically. They have a look of Pellegrini's Villarreal about them. Now, Villarreal were always a side that in Spain were very well liked because they kept the ball well, because they were neat and tidy in possession. But one of the things that was overlooked was that what they fundamentally were good at, Villarreal, in the Champions League at least, slightly less so in La Liga, was protecting themselves and making absolutely sure that they didn't see chances to the other side by keeping possession, by playing from relatively deep. And there's a touch of that about Malaga now. And I think Malaga are genuinely a side that could go quite a long way. I mean, I was saying before the draw that it would depend on the draw. In theory, at least, Porto's not that hard. But given that, you know, Malaga were going to face one of the second-place teams, and it couldn't be Real Madrid, obviously, because they're Spanish as well, then actually Porto is pretty tough. And I know Porto is certainly a lot of the Portuguese fans have said to me, no, watch out for Porto, they're genuinely a good side. But I think Malaga are too, and it's going to be really quite interesting that tie. And I think Malaga are a side that are definitely worth keeping an eye on.
How many Spanish sides are going to be in the quarterfinals, do you think, Sid?
Three.
And who's going to drop out?
Valencia.
Interesting. Sid, many, many thanks. Oh, quick question before you go, actually. I saw somebody tweeting about David Villa's price on a move to Swansea being cut from 40-1 to 11-8 on, and now to evens on some popular betting website. Is that story a goer?
It depends what you mean by is it a goer. Right now, David Villa's situation isn't good. He won't go in the winter window.
He won't.
I think he will go in the... No, I don't think he'll go in the winter window. But I think he may well go in the summer. But there's an awful lot of time between now and the summer for things to shift. I think there's a very good chance that he'll leave Barcelona in the summer, and I think there's a very good chance he'll be to England. I wouldn't be, particularly at those odds, I wouldn't be lumping money on it just yet.
All right, and England not being Wales, of course. Very good.
There is always that.
Marvellous.
There was a great interview with Michu the other day on Under Fedder Radio, and one of the things he said was, they said something obviously about English football. He said, oh, hang on a minute. So Michu's learned not to call it England.
Brilliant.
Jimbo's pulling you up there, but if I'm not mistaken, he had Celtic in England about not 15 minutes ago.
I didn't call them English.
I have a feeling you might have.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I think it's somewhat more justified to lump Swansea in with England, seeing as they play in the English league.
Right.
Not safe to call them English,
right,
but to talk about, for example, saying Michael Laudrup's playing in English football. Yeah, well, he quite clearly is. And Michu quite clearly is playing in
English football,
as well.
Okay, listen, and enjoy those Dark Knight Rises films when you finally catch up with them, eh?
Yeah, and Eartha Kitt isn't still Catwoman, by the way.
Is she not?
No. You're in for a big surprise when you see the latest one.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Who is the latest one? Serious question. Who is the latest one?
Are you kidding me?
Who's the current Catwoman?
Okay, Anne Hathaway. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The best as well.
Woof.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Meow, you mean.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was going to say, who's saying woof? Yeah, now, you can't have a go at me for not knowing who Catwoman is and then respond to Catwoman by saying woof, for Christ's sake.
The thought had never occurred to me, Sid.
That's got to be the most elementary mistake of all time, hasn't
right.
it?
Right.
On the next pod, instead of barking, Stella's going to go meow.
Sid, thanks so much for that. Were you at a Christmas party last night by any chance as well?
I was.
All right, well, listen, we'll speak to you.
It was a good one, James. But yeah. Before I left, I inevitably did it. It doesn't matter how much of a professional journalist you think you are. If you walk past the World Cup on the way out, you take pictures of yourself with it.
Where were you?
At the Spanish Federation.
Right, not in Oslo this time or anything?
Not in Oslo, no. Right, the Spanish Federation, funny enough, isn't in Oslo.
No. Sid, many thanks for that. Look forward to catching up with you on a special pre-Christmas show on Monday, if we may. Nice one. Thanks, Sid.
Fantastic. Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Sid Lowe in Spain. Interesting, the Valencia PSG tip he was saying, because if you watch French football, I've been seeing a fair bit of it, they're not very good, to be fair. And, you know, even Paris Saint-Germain, who spent more than the rest of Ligue 1 has in its history in one season, they're just not very good.
Is a drum I've been banging for 7 years.
But they got all these players.
And been shot down regularly.
But the most fight these players show is when they're trying to park their cars. The other day, seriously, Zlatan Ibrahimovic was told he couldn't park in his preferred spot. So he had a row with the bloke, because it's reserved for like some other worker at the club. So he basically parks his car in front of the entrance to the training ground so nobody else could get in, and then walked off and went training. Like, have some of that. And even Javier Pastore, I don't know if you can picture him, really weedy, thin, Argentine kind of 22-year-old bloke. He apparently kicked down some gate at the training ground because somebody was trying to stop him going through. It's astonishing. He kicked it down.
Wow. That's real strength from a skinny guy.
Well, it might have been a very flimsy MDF.
Don't you think it could be like a Celtic-style situation, though, that they come together and play well when the heat is on?
Well,
I'd say it's the exact opposite.
Right.
They crumble and wilt under the slightest bit of pressure.
It's interesting, isn't it? Interesting. How many British teams are there going to be in the quarterfinals? John Ashdown.
I think there's a very real possibility there could be no British
away
teams
with you, with
in the quarterfinals.
Your Cassandra-esque doom saying...
No, it's not. It's certainly not out of the question, is it, that they've all got extremely tough draws, I think.
And all right.
When was the last time... I haven't got the stats to my hand, but when was the last time that there was no British team in the last eight?
Don't look at me.
Well, we look at you, Paul. You're the only person left in the room.
Yeah, but sometime in the 90s, I imagine.
It must be, yeah.
Wow.
Of the three British teams, I would say Celtic probably have the least frightening draw.
Right.
Theirs is quite tough.
The one we haven't talked about yet is Arsenal's trip to Bayern Munich and Bayern Munich's trip to Arsenal, of course. Arsenal now 45-1. This courtesy of Sean Ingle, you'll be amazed to hear. But what do you think, Paul?
I suspect that given Bayern's resurgent form, I would have thought that they would be favourites for this. And I can't quite see Arsenal, despite the fact they had a, you know, they have their back on this, had a good result, and now everything's looking up.
They've had a good week, haven't they?
Yeah. But I can see them having a few more bad weeks. They can't. I think Bayern will win.
Well, let's see what they do this weekend when they're away at Wigan, who, of course, famously beat Arsenal in that incredible run-in they had to escape relegation at the end of last season. They also beat them 3-2 in 2010, but they aren't in a particularly good run of form at the moment. I think they've...
No, I saw them last Saturday at Carrow Road, and, yeah, I don't think they've got an awful lot of cutting edge about them
Wigan.
This season. Yeah.
Well, he picked Baselli last weekend, didn't he, for the first time in about a year?
Yeah, well, I think in 2 years, actually.
Mm. Which sort of gives an idea of sort of scratching around, looking for a solution to the problem.
I didn't really even realise he was on until he was taken off. So,
James McCarthy also out for this game, apparently, which will have a big impact on them, no?
Yeah, although it is a sort of a bit of a weather vane for Arsenal, this going away to Wigan. I was speaking to an Arsenal fan last night, and he was saying if he was putting a tenner on it, it'd be an Arsenal to score first and then them still to lose. Just because the sort of thing that would happen.
That Squillaci own goal was away at Wigan, wasn't it? The reverse header in his own box is terrible.
Mm. All right.
I can't really see anything other than a comfortable Arsenal win.
Really?
Yeah, Wigan concede a lot at home. They concede on average 2 goals a game, I think, in their last 7 or 7 of their last 8 or something like that. So I don't think they're very good. And McCarthy, as you say, will be a big loss, I would imagine. Arsenal
for quite a while now after being tipped as the guy to get the goals to keep them up.
We're in a state of some confusion about that game. Barry, though, very much sees an Arsenal victory to cap off what's been pretty much their best week of the season, actually. Anyway, there you go. Let's take a quick pause and have a word with ourselves, and then we'll be back with part two. Here's a thing that will cheer you up, John Ashton. Peter Corway says, I asked Paul this already, but I want to open it to the pod. It's your team's Christmas party. You've been invited along. Your favourite player wants to sing a duet with you. What's the song you sing, and who do you sing it with?
Oh, that's a great question, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
It's a bit like tricky, that. What did you respond, Paul, when he asked you this?
Love Lifts Us Up Where We Belong with Wes Houlihan.
Really? Who would be in the Patrick Swayze role, and who would be the Jennifer Grey?
I was thinking of myself as Joe Cocker.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And whoever the woman is can be Wes.
I'd have to go for something from Little Shop of Horrors, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, me and Harry Maguire singing Somewhere That's Green.
Right, nice one. Barry, do you have something for us?
I go for Fairy Tale in New York.
Really?
Well, because it's a Christmas party.
Right, yeah.
And
You'll be in the Kirsty MacColl role, I presume.
I could take the Kirsty MacColl role to Cessignon's Shane McGowan.
Magnificent.
Newcastle cancelled their Christmas party.
Did they? They've joined the
Christmas party. They cancelled their Christmas party out of respect to their fans.
Right.
Some might say that winning some football matches would be a better way of showing some respect.
Right. This whole cancelling Christmas parties thing, it's a bit of a smokescreen, isn't it? Because it's not like the players don't go out and celebrate. They just don't have an organised Christmas thing. It's not like a Christmas party ever affected anyone's performance. Right. Anyway, let's move on with the news that if you were planning to go to Arsenal, West Ham or Boxing Day, don't.
No, why?
Don't go.
Because of the tube strike.
Tube strike.
Won't be a game.
That's a rotten day to have a tube strike on Boxing
Day. That's why they do it.
All right, then. Well, I tell you what, it's going to be a busy Christmas for all sorts of reasons, Paul. 39 games in a fortnight. That's crazy. Amongst them, this very weekend, is Chelsea-Aston Villa. A Chelsea team that certainly made us look a bit silly with our prediction they were going to struggle away at Leeds. They didn't struggle, did they, Barry?
Well, they did up to a point because they were losing at half-time.
Right.
And it looked like it could be one of those classic rainy, wet night up north, poncy London team going to come a cropper. And then they proceeded to hammer Leeds in the second half.
Well, the numbers say 18 goals in five games for Rafa's new look.
Rafa's pragmatic Chelsea.
Yeah, well, it's not bad goal tally, is it? For supposedly defensive, dull Spaniard. In the semi-finals of the League Cup, they'll be taking on Swansea, while Bradford will host Aston Villa, which ironically is, as I mentioned, the team, it's not ironic, but it is curiously, is the team that Chelsea are hosting this weekend. Now, you'd think Chelsea would, wouldn't you? You'd think Chelsea would have this one, but then Villa went there and they won 3-1 last season.
Yeah, different Villa side.
Yeah, one better that, Villa side this time.
Yeah, better, but still a work in progress, and one that I think is weakest defensively. I mean, he's changed the shape.
Yep.
And they look more solid than they were, but still a lot of inexperience, and I can see Chelsea scoring more than one.
Really?
The weekend, yeah. Definitely.
You know, I mean, people didn't think Villa had much chance going to Liverpool, and they had that big win there.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this Chelsea side, Terry's still out. There's no Romeo either, so, you know.
Maybe time for Luiz in central midfield again.
Possibly so. Possibly so. So you're all saying, basically, Chelsea...
Yeah.
Not necessarily, no.
We gave Villa a lot of praise last week and
yeah,
they went and proved us right for once by winning at Anfield. And I think if they get their noses ahead at Stamford Bridge, then they'll have a chance.
6 points, across the gap at the top between City and United. Strong chances, perhaps that might come down a bit because City are hosting Reading. Ouch. No. Balotelli's dropped his legal fight thing. New mood of harmony in the camp. Aguero and Tevez. Reading conceding how many goals a game is it? Bundles. That's got to be a home win, no?
You'd think so, yes.
Yeah. All right. While United go to Swansea, Barry.
Yeah, that's one of them. It's one of several interesting fixtures this weekend. And United haven't lost in...
Well, they're on a 5-game winning run.
Well, they've won 10 out of their last 11 in the Premier League.
They scored 10 goals in their last three. Have you got a number for us, Paul?
Six.
Okay.
They've been leading at half-time and full-time in their last four.
Right. You're very quiet over there, John. Anyway, sorry, Barry.
What game are we talking about?
We're talking about the situation at the top, John. Anyway, let's move on from the situation at the top, which is interesting, and will be even more interesting if that gap
comes down. Are we giving Swansea a chance of beating Manchester United?
Are you? You've got to give them a chance, haven't you?
Well, of course, there's every chance.
Right.
But...
Their form's dropped off a little bit, hasn't it, Swansea?
Has it?
Yeah, so I think it could be quite interesting. Maybe an opportunity for them to kick on again. It's the sort of game that motivates a side like, you know, in the mid-table.
Yep, absolutely. Now, mention for Spurs, who've won four in a row. Can they make it five? Five in a row there at home to Stoke. What do you think about that, John?
I think it's a tough one for them because Stoke are just very, very hard to beat. Is Gareth Bale back this weekend, do we think?
I thought he'd done his hamstring and thus was out for a sustained period of time.
No, I think it was only a couple of weeks that he's supposed to be out. So he might be back this week. Mind you, they're not actually over-reliant on him so much these days, I don't think. They've got a lot of options in midfield. I quite like Dempsey when he plays out on the left. I think he, with a bit more space out there, he operates slightly better. So, yeah, but it'd be an interesting test of their top four credentials because it's one of those matches you really need to win home against Stoke, but I don't think it's an easy one at all.
All right. On
the subject of players being out, I sort of flagged my theory on Monday about players getting deliberately suspended so they'd have Christmas off. And in a state of affairs that's in no way related to that whatsoever, I'm sure, someone drew my attention to the fact that for the last three Christmases, Jack Lester has been sent off before the festive period for violent conduct.
Remarkable. Gareth Bale is back in training. Whether that will lead to some participation in the game, I can't say at this point.
Searching on your iPad Mini there?
I was actually searching on my iPad Mini, but guest producer Matt Hill searched on his big computer. Oh, fun.
Wow.
At the bottom, or in games relating to events at the bottom, there's all sorts of drama, Barry, as you were hinting. We mentioned Wigan-Arsenal. Wigan are, of course, in some difficulty down there. Third last currently. Newcastle taking on QPR. Harry, he's here to help.
This is the game of the weekend for me. I think it's absolutely must-win for both teams. Must-win for QPR for obvious reasons, because they need to pick up as many points as they possibly can. And Newcastle are in free fall. Their descent down the Premier League table is, they're like a rock going to the bottom of the swimming pool. They've lost, I think, six out of their last seven. They've key players out through injury. And they have an absolutely shocking festive fixture list after this. Their two away games are to
Man United.
Manchester United and Arsenal. And I can't remember who they've got at home.
Well, that's enough already, isn't it?
Yeah. There's every possibility there. If Newcastle lose this game, there's every possibility that they will get no points out of 12 over Christmas and New Year.
Wow.
Another interesting thing about Newcastle QPR is it's the bringing together of Hatem Ben Arfa v Adil Taarab, these two sort of languid, mercurial Arab talents, and it'll be interesting to see who wins that particular face-off.
Can you be both languid and mercurial?
Good question.
Right. I'm going to say no, but I know what you mean. That's what they call journalistic license. Another interesting thing about QPR's trip to Newcastle, which is actually not to do with the game at all, but it's just a mention, the guardian.co.uk/film... section of the website, films. You know.
Yeah, I've seen some.
Right.
Yep, like them.
Yep.
Sometimes don't like them.
Have you seen the four-year plan, Paul?
About QPR.
The QPR documentary.
Michael Hand's favourite film.
Is it?
Well, he talked about it on this pod.
He did. Well, it's an amazing film. It's an amazing film and a real eye-opening insight into the workings of a club trying to make its way into the booty-filled bonanza of the Premier League. It's available, should Michael want to watch it again, at guardian.co.uk/film for £2.99, which I'm told is a very special price, so you can watch it there. Sort of
to stream or to download or both?
Cheapest, I don't know. But go to guardian.co.uk/film and find out. Now, they are a place and a point above Sunderland, who are a place and a point above Southampton, who they visit this weekend. That's a difficult game for Sunderland, I'm thinking. Away there at St Mary's?
Every game is difficult for Sunderland at the moment. I'm not, you know, not being flippant, because they're just not a very good side. And I would imagine Southampton on their day would dispatch them quite easily. Sunderland have been shown signs of life recently, though. Even in defeat against Chelsea, they were okay. In defeat against Manchester United, they were quite good, actually, towards the end and could have rescued a point from both games, but didn't.
All right. In other games, will Norwich make it 11 games unbeaten in a row?
Yeah, I think it's match up of the two overachieving, much hyped sides. I suspect it's time for our bubble to burst. But
really,
yeah, I'd rather it didn't.
Well, of course, of course. West Ham will be entertaining an Everton side which will be Fellainiless.
Yeah.
And you know, he only got three games, though. You were suggesting it might be significantly more, Barry.
Yeah, well, I wasn't quite sure how the disciplinary process works, but he only got punished for one offence, the headbutt. So it was for violent conduct, and three games is the ban for that. I'm still not sure how Joey Barton got 12, though, for what seemed like a far less serious offence.
It was almost like that could have instigated trouble in the ground, though, couldn't it? I mean, it was so protracted and so visible.
Which the Joey Barton incident. Yeah. Well, how much impact will that have on Everton? They've had to cope. They've coped with that in before.
West Ham are so consistent. West Ham are so consistent and very difficult to break down, and, you know, can out muscle you at any moment and score a goal.
So he's exactly the kind of player you'd want. Morales is also out for this game.
Yeah,
so.
I think they. But you know, I could see this being a draw.
I mean, Everton are kind of draw specialists, aren't they? Last weekend they drew at Stoke, and that was one of the more obvious results ahead of the games. I think West Ham have got a real injury crisis on. I saw them at the Hawthorns last weekend when they. We're in that stalemate with West Brom. And yeah, Sam Allardyce named only six subs, three of whom were teenagers who'd never played a Premier League game, which was slightly. I always found that slightly odd when a manager only named six subs, because surely you could throw in a kid, not a kid from the crowd, but, you know, a youngster, just to give him a bit of match day experience.
But isn't it always a pointed statement to the chairman, you know, I can't even fill the bench, I need to buy players, give me some money.
Possibly with Big Sam, there just wasn't room.
Well, he did say afterwards that once he's got all these, I think there's seven first teamers out with injury, once he's got them all back, he doesn't need to sign anybody. But that was his sort of line in the press conference afterwards. So maybe not, I don't know. But yeah, that's a draw on the cards there, surely.
Is it a draw on the cards? And Liverpool hosting Fulham after their defeat last time out against Villa, we mentioned that. Liverpool's home record, not what it was. No.
Fulham's away record is shocking.
It's always what it was. Yeah.
Something's got to give.
Fulham are quite... Well, I think the selection, what Martin Jol chooses to... The team that he picks at Anfield will be quite interesting, because I think he really likes Mladen Petric alongside Berbatov up front. He says that Petric is the best finisher that he's ever worked with, which is quite a big claim for him. But I don't think they work together I don't think he's a particular good foil for Berbatov, who's obviously got this languid style, and you need someone with a bit more dynamism. And I think Rodiega's the better foil for Berbatov. So it'll be interesting to see which he picks. I imagine he'll go for Petric, just because he's slightly less sort of more consistent.
Fulham have really had a rotten run of results of late, which has gone almost unnoticed. They've slipped all the way down to 13th. They're 5 points still above the bottom three. Some form of result would be very good news for the Cottagers. Speaking of very good news, it's nice that at last, 23 years later, they deigned to overturn the initial inquests into the Hillsborough tragedy. And extraordinary that I think the hearing took an hour and a half after all that time. It took them just an hour and a half to sit down and go, yeah, this is clearly rubbish, and we'll do a new one.
Yeah.
Astonishing. Well, that's the end of part two. Still to come, loads more pre-Christmas fun. Your posts after this. Part three, extra time. Penalties looming.
Ewoks.
Eh?
Ewoks. Third part of the trilogy. Running out of material, sticking some Ewoks.
Right. Well, here they are then. Anti-Football says Nicola Berti, apparently he invested wisely in property and spends half his life sailing in the Caribbean and the rest in Italy. Isn't that magnificent?
Lucky bastard.
Yeah. But isn't that almost like on a grey winter's day like today, isn't that? It's good to know somebody's out there sailing 6 months a year in the Caribbean. Bacalieri says, I like Nicola. He apparently used to call Bergkamp Beavis when they were at Inter together. When he did it in a friendly against Arsenal, Tony Adams told him to cut it out. Bergkamp joined Arsenal that summer. Interesting.
He does look like Beavis.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah, I've never really thought of that before.
Yeah, well, credit to Berti. Tell you what, speaking about Nicola Berti, how's about a little bit of Italian funno games? I only want to mention, really, that Roma-Milan is on this weekend. And it's a big game, of course. Always like a bit of Roma. They got beaten by Chievo. They didn't score last weekend, which is a bit of a slap in the face of the whole Zeman revolution thing. But by and large, they've been terrifically entertaining to watch. They've managed to struggle a bit up the table. They're now in sixth place. Just behind them are Milan, who have also struggled their way back up the table. They scored five goals last weekend, but it was against rubbish old Pescara. But this is going to be a big game, and it's traditionally a game which sees lots of goals. But it's also traditionally a game that Milan don't win. So, yeah, should be an interesting one, that. Also worth keeping an eye out for. I'm not sure what's going to be on telly. Palermo Fiorentina could have loads of goals there. Sampdoria Lazio, poor old Ciro Ferrara got the boot from Sampdoria. And, Cagliari Juventus, which won't be played in Cagliari. Because I don't know if you remember last year when Cagliari were... They got into an altercation with the council and their stadium, so they went to the furthest point in Italy to play their games. It's kind of a gesture. And since then, he's found this local council who are a bit more amenable to him, Chile, you know, the guy who runs Cagliari, and wanted to buy West Ham brilliantly, which certainly would have been an interesting cocktail. But anyway, he found this local commune and he built some kind of temporary seats there, and they unveiled this new arena. And I think they've had about 3 home games there, and already the councillor said, no, you can't play here because we gave you a temporary permit until you fix the place up and you haven't bothered. So now you can't play here either.
So he jerry-rigged a stadium together.
He pretty much, it was like a little kind of council athletics track thing, and they stuck some seats up. I might be...
Like the With Dean.
Yeah. So now they're on the road again, and they've decided to go to... This is a December night. It's an evening game. They've decided to go to the foggiest place possibly in Italy, Parma. So Parma's also a really difficult place to get to. If you're flying from Cagliari, if you're a season ticket holder, you think, oh, I don't mind, I'll follow my team wherever. He's really set you a challenge here, because Parma, you can't fly straight there or anything.
I was expecting the foggiest place in Italy to be Foggia.
Oh, right. That's a good show, actually. That's not actually... Funnily enough... That's not actually that foggy. I should mention as well that Napoli, meantime, did get that punishment we were talking about in the last edition of Football Weekly. They were docked 2 points, which has dropped them down to 5th place now in the table. And a couple of their players given lengthy bans. The club are irate about it, but the league say that it's what they call par condicio, that it has to be an even approach with all the clubs whose players were in any way connected or failed to report match-fixing activities. And so they've been docked 2 points. We'll talk more about that in Friday's paper review. Barry, anything else you want to throw at the listeners before they, assuming they're still there?
I very much doubt they're still there. We could probably pontificate briefly on the Zenit St. Petersburg fans.
They're a rum bunch,
charter,
aren't they?
Part 1 and 2.
Well, tell me about this.
Well, they issued a charter saying that they didn't want their team to sign black players or homosexuals.
Right. Can they do that legally?
Well, they can issue a charter legally, yes, but
I'm not sure
they got shot down for it, and everyone roundly criticised them, and rightfully so. They said, you know, we want an ethnically clean team, basically, comprised only of Russians or Slavic brethren and whatnot. But Jonathan Wilson wrote an interesting piece about it yesterday and said that they deserve a certain amount of credit because although they're still being racist and homophobic... They're at least acknowledging the fact that they're not quite as racist and homophobic as they used to be. And for that, they deserve a little bit of credit.
How did they acknowledge that?
Well, when everyone went up in arms about how disgusting their first sort of charter was,
right.
They issued a follow-up going, well, actually, we're not racist. We're not racist, but... dot, dot, dot.
How does it work with the gay players? In that there's presumably no gay players... at Zenit St. Petersburg, because
there's no gay players anywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
any gay footballers anywhere. There's only ever been Justin Fashion, who's the only...
Him on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that them saying they know that they have a gay player in the dressing room, or is that them just kind of just sticking it in there just to be extra egregious?
Good choice.
Nobody knows.
I think they're just making a bit of a statement, like, don't sign undesirables. But I'm fascinated. I didn't know they'd actually officially unveil the charter, but...
Yeah, well, it was a sort of an open letter they sent to the club president.
Right.
Because it was open, everyone else could read it too.
Good.
But that Jonathan Wilson article on it is well worth digging out. And I think he got a bit of grief for it on Twitter. But
right.
It's, well, a very thoughtful piece.
Mm.
Well, it's not entirely unheard of that teams... Well, you take the example of Bilbao, who famously only signed... Basque players,
yeah,
you know. So it's not unheard of that teams do this, I suppose, but crazy.
Certainly is.
Can I also recommend another article,
right?
Which is on the Guardian's website, which is about Sir Alex Ferguson's secrets of management.
Oh, the one the lecture he gave to Harvard.
Yes,
right.
Which he says there is no better thing that you can say to a footballer than "well done." That's it. That's the top level praise.
Well done.
Well done.
Okay.
Don't know if that applies to podcasters as well.
Well, I was imagining that might be where it went, but right. Apparently not. It's totally underwhelmed.
Right. Okay. That's it for today's pod. Many, many thanks to you all for joining us today. Barry, Paul, John. Guest producer Matt Hill, who is not going to come back for Mondays, apparently.
I'm not surprised.
In company with many of our listeners. Good. Do hope you'll be joining me for a pay-per-view on Friday morning. And if you do feel like watching the four-year plan, etc., guardian.co.uk/film. Have a super weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.